Hi, and welcome to NARC, Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Collaborators, home to NARC Troopers. If you like today's episode, check me out at narctroopers.com, which is the storehouse for all of my materials, my library of articles, podcasts, YouTube videos, and an assortment of other recovery tools. Today, we're going to talk about something a little bit heavy, but it's, you know, what's not heavy these days, right? We're going to talk about the age of the primary F1 psychopath, because it has arrived. We are here. And sorting out the different kinds of psychopaths and sociopaths and narcissists, well, you know, it's just so much fun. Says no one ever. So let's begin with this and just dive in, jump in. So I want to start by saying that in a recent article, Coyne and Thomas, two researchers from 2008, they define a factor one primary psychopath as individuals who generally show low levels of anxiety, empathy, fear, and emotion due to some intrinsic deficit rather than due to environmental or emotional difficulties. Doesn't that sound familiar? I want to just say that it's really confusing sometimes, because all cluster B disorders have overlapping features. That's why they're grouped together on the DSM classification of mental disorders. And even though they have commonalities that overlap, kind of like a Venn diagram, there's also some things that set them apart. So yes, we're going to recognize things in the psychopath that are definitely characteristic in a person with narcissistic personality disorder. And sometimes, you know, you can be both, even though they seem to be contradictory, and even though the etymology of the disorder is most likely different, there's enough common features there to definitely connect the dots. So let's go on to say a little bit more. Factor two secondary psychopaths are a little more human, with a relatively normal capacity for emotional experience, but many of them have an excess of negative emotions and high levels of anxiety and emotional distress, hostility, aggression, and of course, impulsive behavior, which is common with all cluster B. So, you know, these are, you think, oh, well, these psychopaths are not someone that you're going to want to bring home and have them meet your family, but that's exactly what we do. We invite them in and, you know, we hand them the keys and we welcome them into our lives. We choose them, trust them, revere them, and what they can do for us. You know, you may be asking yourself, why? Why do so many people in positions of power seem to be psychopaths, especially these days? And why are they so charming and convincing? And how is it, you know, that they, how are they different from a narcissist? They are all lumped into one cluster B category. So can someone be narcissistic and psychopathic at the same time? Well, there are sociopaths in all of this, and so where do they fit in? There's so many different kinds of these types of people. It's a spectrum disorder, so you could have it on the light end or the, you know, the shallow end of it. Or it could be in the deep end, very pathological, and life-changing and malignant. So, are they all sort of the same beast? So many questions. So let's drill down and take a look. One of the most significant differences rests in the idea that narcissists are made and psychopaths are born. But let's review some basic terms before we go any further. This is kind of like a little glossary. A primary factor one psychopath. Psychopathy is a spectrum disorder and can be diagnosed using the 20-item Hare psychopathy checklist. That's Hare, Hare psychopathy checklist, which features traits such as lack of empathy, pathological lying, manipulation, selective amnesia, victim blaming, and superficiality. And each one of these things are scored on a 3-point scale. Each one of those things are characteristics of narcissist as well. So the secondary factor two psychopath is also known as a sociopath. And the person with antisocial personality disorder is a type of psychopath on the spectrum, but it is markedly can be identified by flat affect and lack of empathy or remorse, and impulsivity and an erratic lifestyle that is unstable and unpredictable. Psychopathic ASPD, that's antisocial personality disorder, is another separate thing to talk about. Psychopathy and ASPD are not separate diagnostic entities, but psychopathic ASPD is a more severe form of antisocial personality disorder, along with a greater risk of violence. So when you add that in, it just amplifies it and makes it increase. Narcissism is a cluster B personality disorder that is on the spectrum. Also, you can have it light, which is sort of like, all of us have a little bit of it, or you can have it pathological extremes. It is a maladaptive response to early trauma when the child is, decides to survive by euthanizing their authentic self and creating a false persona that has superpowers that make them impervious to pain. They have a schizoid empty core with no ego or identity, which compels them to seek fuel and supply in order to prop up this fictional narrative that they have going that supports this false persona. So they are delusional and they do not dwell in the same reality as a neurotypical person. They experience life through internalizing all external objects, you included, and have control over how to interact with those objects through idealization, infatuation, devaluation, and then discard. That's the cycle. None of it really requires them to really see you and experience you as a real human being, since they internalize everything. You're just inside of them, like a picture or a representation or a Barbie doll or something like that. But they don't interact with the human part, like the real flesh and blood part of you, because they have conceptualized you inside their head. And that's the version of you that they're in a relationship with, sort of, if you call that a relationship, right? So there are numerous kinds of narcissists, but no type constancy, which means that they are fluid. They're mercurial. Don't you love that word, mercurial? And they can change, from one type to another whenever they need to. Some narcissists may become primary psychopaths, at least share characteristics with them. They are incapable of positive emotions or emotional empathy, love, intimacy, attachment, remorse, fear, or shame. any of those things. So then there's the narcopath. You hear about that. This is not a clinical term. There's no such thing in the DSM manual of mental health disorders as a narcopath. It's sort of narcissistic psychopath blended hybrid coined term. Maybe it's going to be adopted. You know, it hasn't been that long ago, maybe the 1990s, that Dr. Sam Faknin came up with a lot of the terms we now use. Maybe narcopath is going to find its way, I mean, into this glossary, you know, into a legitimate dictionary of terms, because it's just such a great word to describe this, and it's used so commonly. So it's sort of a pop culture slang term that represents this hybrid narcissist psychopath, which almost always overlap and combine in some way. If a person has psychopathic traits, then they tend to have narcissistic and Machiavellian traits as well. There are a few pure narcissists or psychopaths, which explains why they are lumped together in this cluster B category. The psychopathic narcissist creates their own version of reality, seen and interpreted through the warped and distorted lens of pathological false persona, and props up their delusional version of the world. You know, it doesn't hurt to toss one more hat into the cluster B ring. This person with borderline personality disorder is characterized primarily by a history of early trauma, a need for external validation, and inability to self-regulate their emotions. In some cases, the person with BPD can become a secondary psychopath. Unlike the narcissist or psychopath, the prognosis for the borderline is not terminal as it is with the others. The borderline is the one that can actually stop outsourcing their needs, and they can become, you know, which makes them become overly dependent and all that. And they can learn to regulate them. They can become self-reflective, and they can learn whereas the others cannot. The borderline still has some kind of fragmented core ego, even though it doesn't function very well. It's there, it exists. And they have that identity to work with and authentic emotions to work with, even though the emotions may be out of control, they have them. The narcissist and psychopath have no inner ego identity, therefore, they have nothing to work with, only emptiness and absence. So here is a problem to consider. If all psychopaths are narcissists, and they are, does that mean that all narcissists are psychopaths? According to the Society for the Scientific Study of Psychopathy, narcissism is an interpersonal symptom of psychopathy. Think about that. In order to be considered a psychopath, many other psychopathic symptoms, such as a lack of attachment to others, superficial charm, dishonesty, manipulativeness, and reckless risk-taking, come into play. But you know, if you ask me, that kind of sounds like a narcissist too. Certainly, psychopathic narcissists exist, but not all narcissists are psychopaths. Okay, that takes it to a whole nother level and adds a whole lot of other red flags, markers, symptoms, manifestations of the disorder. All in all, cluster B disordered people come in many sizes, shapes, and flavors, but the main takeaway here is that this disorder and what that means to the people around them is important. Enter the age of the psychopathic narcissist. Ah, yes, you know I was going to go there. And, you know, I don't like to be gloomy and doomy. I believe In a higher power. I do. I believe that things will all work out in the end because the good guys are going to be victorious, even if the bad guys win these little small skirmishes and battles in the meantime. In the end, we know how it ends. The good guys win, right? And so I don't get all caught up in, like, yeah, it seems like the world is filled with a lot of disordered people who do some really horrific things, but I know it's temporary. Maybe there's a little bit of solace to be had with that. But it does seem like there's more of them these days than ever before. I was listening to one of Dr. Vaknin's lectures the other day. He was talking about how ages in history were defined by certain neurochemicals, neurotransmitters, hormones, like these innate, intrinsic things that are in us, and that there was an age of, the first age was the age of testosterone, power, strength, brute force, that kind of thing. And it was what gave way to the patriarchy that we have experienced and is in place in so many cultures and throughout the world. The second stage, and this word is pronounced differently depending on where you live in the world. I think the European pronunciation of it is oxytocin, and the American pronunciation is oxytocin. Oxytocin, oxytocin. I'm torn on which one to go with because I think they're both correct, depending on where you live. But that was the second age, and this is the age. It's the hormone that regulates all these yummy, delicious feelings, makes everybody want to sit around a fire singing kumbaya and making s'mores. Right? Are you picturing that? That's kind of what oxycodone. Yeah, definitely. Oxytocin. That was a Freudian slip, wasn't it? That's what oxytocin or oxytocin produces. And we have a whole age of people talking about finding your tribe and being communal and everybody loving each other and, flower power and make love, not war, and all that kind of stuff. And now the third age that we're already transitioning into it. You think we still live in the age of oxytocin or oxytocin? No way. We live in the age of what I said before, oxycodone, with all the people drugged up on that, on opioids and stuff. That's what that is. And that's unfortunate. So we live in the age of dopamine. That's the drug that drives our car these days and is bad because you could do anything, have aggression, be very selfish, self-motivated, greedy, capitalistic pig kind of mentality, because that drive for the dopamine is tremendous. And another thing to think about in terms of that is that it's that dopamine addiction that we have when we're involved in abusive relationships, because the intermittent reinforcement cycles of them being so perfect and then such a horror show, such a freak show of terrible stuff that they do, how it goes back and forth and back and forth. Well, when you're stuck in these things, your brain waits for the dopamine hit that comes when you're so relieved, when they suddenly stop being the devil incarnate, and they start being so sweet to you, and your body just gets flooded with this dopamine, which is like, oh my gosh, it's like heroin or something. And so you get so addicted to it that that's why you tolerate the abuse, because you know if you can just kind of like ignore it or look away, that it'll be over soon, and just don't acknowledge it. And then when the good stuff comes, it's going to be powerful. And it's just gonna gush all over you, and you're gonna just be drowning in that dopamine, and it's just gonna be the most delicious thing you've ever experienced. Ecstasy, bliss. And that's what keeps many of us trauma bonded. That's an explanation kind of what that is through intermittent reinforcement. Anyway, this is the age of dopamine, and it's the age of the psychopath and the narcissist. Come on, look around you. Right? It seems like many, if not most, of the movers and shakers in the current geopolitical landscape easily fall into one of these pathological descriptions. In addition to world leaders like, oligarchs, billionaires, all these people that are running the show, like Netanyahu, that is not really how that's truly pronounced, but that's the American bastardized version of Netanyahu. He's the head guy in Israel who can just wipe out women, children, elderly, innocent civilians, even the workers going to help them. He can just do all that and doesn't even blink an eye. Nothing, nothing. It's like it must be done. Must be done. And he's not the only one. Think about world leaders all over the place. I won't name the ones here in this country, but I have a suspicion that it's possible. It's not just Trump, but both Trump and Biden could possibly both be disordered, right? Just in different ways, or better at covering it up or something. Neither one of them great choices. And we won't get into that. But in addition to these world leaders and all of that, they've infiltrated almost every system. All of our systems are failing. The education system, the healthcare system, the court system, the economic system, finance system, criminal system, the justice and courts of law system, the just every system, entities like corporations and activist movements are rife with cluster B disordered individuals, and many of them claim to be victims because that is what narcissists and psychopaths do. They claim to be the victim. And a lot of these things that are fueled, these movements are victim fueled movements. We were mistreated and abused and objectified and vilified and demonized all that for so long that we're victims and we have to have justice and reparations, or we have to have restorative justice, or whatever. So that's just kind of the thing now that marks this era that we are transitioning into. It's not just stateside either. It is global. And so what do all of the masses do in response to the idea, this 8.5 billion populace that inhabits this planet? How do all of them perceive this phenomenon? You've thought about it, right? You don't think that all these people doing all of this crazy messed up stuff are okay in the head. You know that there's something rotten in Denmark. I don't know what that means, but I know people say it. I'm gonna guess fish. Fish must be those little kipper snacks, the little canned fish that they eat for breakfast. Maybe that's what's rotten in Denmark. I know probably there's maybe it comes from Hamlet. There was something rotten in Denmark there. It was Claudius the king getting with Hamlet's mom and all of that. Maybe that was the rotten. I don't know. A lot of stuff happening in Denmark. Anyway, sorry, I'm getting off track. So what do the 8.5 billion people on this planet think about all of this? Well, here's something that's gonna not be good to tell you. They support it. That's what they do. Few people recognize what it is, and if they do, they're just like, oh well, it's nothing I can control, so I'm gonna spend my energy on the things that I can control, so I'm just not even gonna worry about it. And that's one group. And then the other group is like, what are you talking about? These people are amazing. They're winners and they're winning. What difference does it make how they became winners or what they did to get to the top. The bottom line is they got to the top. And so the means justify the ends. Is that right? Or the ends? Yeah, the ends justify the means. Whatever that saying is, it's saying whatever happens in the end, as long as you win, then whatever you had to do to make that happen is justified. That's the world we live in. Dog eat dog, you know? Climb up on the backs of the poor and of the helpless and the refugees and the this and the that and on just, you know, just go ahead and step on their faces on the way to the top. The important thing is that you get to the top. We glorify it. We champion it. We stand up, give them a standing ovation. So that's the kind of world we live in. Those are our heroes, our role models, the people that we look up to are these ruthless, immoral, vulgar, merciless, conscienceless brutes because they have power and they get what they want and they get it in some pretty awful ways. Unscrupulous ways, unsavory ways, but it's like nobody seems to care about that. And all the while, they are thinking that the goal of defeating the enemy, whoever that may happen to be at the time, which could be ethnic groups or certain countries or women or disabled people or elderly. Tell me there's not a war on the elderly. Children, anybody that's weak and can't protect themselves, vulnerable. Teachers are attacked. Academia, higher education, police, law enforcement, snowflakes, the extreme left, the extreme right, the extreme anything. I could just keep going on and on. You know, they basically say that winning and getting what they want justifies anything. They would vote for the devil himself if it was going to get them to have the agenda that they're going after to get those boxes checked, you know, done, done, done. I delivered. I gave you the things that I wanted, that you wanted. I gave them to you. So now you got to vote for me and keep me in office, even though I'm the most despicable, horrible human being that ever lived. That's kind of the deal, right? Isn't that the deal? That you get a couple of things that you think you really, really want that are important to you, like abortion. As long as you get that, you could vote for the devil himself and do it with a good conscience because he got you what you wanted. So you made a deal with the devil, essentially. That's, you know, kind of what you did. Think about Dr. Faustus. He wanted to do good things. He made a deal to know ultimate wisdom and knowledge forever and ever so that he could stop wars and cure disease. And he had noble intentions. He did. He wasn't just doing it for himself. He was like a teacher. He was a college professor. He was one of those people. He wanted to know everything. He just lusted after knowledge, which, you know, I think it's pretty cool because I'm a teacher, but he went too far and he made a deal with the devil. Like, you know, let me be the smartest person anywhere, not just to be the smartest, but so that I can cure all the world's ills. You know, sometimes the road to hell is paved with good intentions. You think you want to do something good for the world, you're ready to get in bed with the devil to do it. I think there's something wrong with that. I don't think that's a good idea. Danger, danger. I'm going to call it for what it is. You don't do that. Don't do that. You don't sign on the dotted line, and make a deal with that. Okay. I got off subject again. Okay. So, these people believe they are above the law and they believe that, you know, that they are, what do they believe? They believe that they don't have to be like the rest of us, that they're special. It's that grandiosity kicking in, and they're just going to do whatever serves their best self, as long as it doesn't like get, you know, too hard to do that. That's what they're going to do, and people just support that like crazy. Okay, so who are the ultimate winners in this situation? The ruthless, the unethical, the immoral, the liars, the delusional, the opportunists, the exploiters, the users, the myopic, the heartless, the predators. You know, these are the people, these are the ones that are climbing to the top. And, oh, you know, that's not a good thing. So what kind of world is it that is worth saving when the victories happen at the expense of poor and vulnerable people, the disenfranchised, the weak, and the vulnerable? Oh, yeah. Think about it. You know that's right. In a situation like that, can we actually celebrate this so-called winning? Is that winning? You know, with so much collateral damage and tragic victims, how can we rejoice? That's not winning. That is fear-driven desperation and despair. It is scapegoating and making, like, trying to make some kind of crazy sense of a world that is stupid. For those of us who were gutted and eviscerated, which is sliced open with your intestines falling out, you know, by this psychopathic narcissist, you know, we can give testimony that what they did was a crime against humanity. It was an annihilation of hope and trust and spirit. It was a perversion of love and a depraved and vulgar and obscene corruption that, you know, another human being for personal gain. They're not just corrupt, they corrupted us. They infected us with poison. And, you know, it was a ruinous, it's a hard word to say, corruption of faith and goodness and the only things that truly matter in this world. They pissed all over it. They destroyed it. And we're going to let that happen just to achieve our ends, our end goals. I don't think that's a good idea. You know, they're all serial killers and soul rapists, if not literally, then metaphorically. Either way, they are not conquerors. You know, they are cowards. Sick, twisted cowards who hide behind their mask of sanity. And that's what it is. It's not sanity. It's a mask. It's a mask of sanity. And they have this savior complex. You know, they're living false lives built on lies and deception and the blood and bones of their victims. Yes, they are mentally ill and they're dangerous. But that's not an excuse. It is a warning, right? It's not an excuse. It's a warning. So what is my message today? I want to say that knowing all this stuff about psychopaths, antisocial, personality disordered, and narcissists is really important. People say, well, what difference does it make? It makes a huge difference because these aren't just bad people. These are sick people who do really bad things. And understanding how that happens, why it happens, and all the ins and outs of that are critical to being able to anticipate their next move, to protect yourself from them when one of them heads your way and you get on their radar, to be able to look at the world around us and try to measure and evaluate how far you're willing to go to get what you want, even if you think it's righteous or even if you think it's for the better good of the majority of people. None of that matters. How far are you willing to go with these sick and disordered people who have no conscience, no soul, they have no inner core, they're empty, hollow, and absent, and they do horrible harm. They destroy, they murder, they maim. Not convinced that they don't even just curse you in the end, which, like, continues to eat at you and make you disintegrate even after they're gone. I think that there's some version of that going on. This is dangerous stuff. And I just don't think that we can make deals with them, with these people who have positions of power, whether it's in a corporation or some entity, some system, some CEO, something like that, or if it's a political person in power, whoever it is, to try to make transactional agreements with these people to benefit your agenda is, well, it's just it's not good. It's not okay. And so let's think about this. And I invite you to do that, to just think about some of the things that I have just said here and think about, well, what can you do to protect yourself and your family and your children and all of that? What can you do to help spread the word that the growing number of these people that we hold in high esteem who are unwell and untethered from reality and terribly, terribly dangerous, that we can inform them to be on the lookout, to be wary, to get your guard up, get your guard up and don't let it down, because these are dangerous times. These are scary times. And don't for a minute just stick your head in the sand. Sure, I believe in gratitude right now, count naming every day the things that I'm grateful for instead of all of the things that challenge me or that make me sad and break my heart. I don't focus on those. I try to practice gratitude and I try to grow my faith and my belief that good will be victorious, and I just have to stay on the right path and be on that team instead of the team of darkness and bad things. You don't want to be on that team. I've seen some things. I know some things, and trust me, you do not want to be on that team. You don't even want to play with that team. Just say no. We're going to forfeit this game. Go ahead, take the win. We're leaving. We don't even want to be near you, in proximity to you, because you're scary, you're stinky, you're icky, and you're evil. And that is a bad thing. And you don't fraternize with them. You don't make friends, cozy up, make a deal, do something to try to, no. Just keep your distance. Keep your distance. And it's a lot safer that way. You're going to come out of it maybe in one piece. And when you get involved with them, for whatever reason, you think you're getting something out of it or whatever, you are putting yourself and everybody and everything that you care about at risk. And it's not going to end well for you. They are powerful predators, and I believe they have forces of darkness helping them out to go through this world, tearing people into pieces and making everything just like this giant black hole that we're all getting sucked into. I saw a picture of a black hole today in the center of the Milky Way. A friend of mine, Gabriel Mata, I taught with him very briefly at Aikens High School in Austin, Texas. Shout out, Aikens Eagles, yeah. And he posted something about a black hole, and I thought, oh hell yes, this is exactly what these people are. They're okay. So you can feel sorry for them, whatever. But at the end of the day, they're a black hole, and they will suck you in into oblivion. And you just, I don't think you want that. You don't want to lose yourself and lose your soul and your heart and your relationships and your love and your all the things that they don't have. You don't want to just give up all that for whatever reason you think you need to have something to do with them. Get away. Sometimes I still miss the life that I had with my narcissistic husband of 15 years. There were so many parts of that that were just absolutely everything I ever wanted. It was like everything that I ever wanted, but it was also everything that I never wanted. And it was all rolled up into one big mess, you know? And when I think about that, I think, you know, that was something that, yeah, it was great and parts of it were, but the cost that you pay to have these people in your life, you can never pay it. The cost is too high. It's going to bankrupt you, I promise. And you're going to come out of it, in a you're not going to be in one piece. That's all I have to tell you. So that's the take that as you depart here. And so I got to get going. This is already a 40-minute podcast. It's a little bit longer than usual, but important stuff to think about. So stay away from those sick and dangerous people. They're empty and they have nothing for you. Don't make deals with them. Don't hang around them. Just stay away. Get firm boundaries, and arm yourself with whatever things that you can, your faith, your health, your whatever, you know, the things that can help you resist. And do not, just do not, just tell yourself, I'm not gonna, and don't look up to them. You do not, just because they're winning temporarily and it looks like they're doing well, getting what they want, making things happen. It's not like that. It's not. It's all crazy and deceptive and delusional and temporary. And there's a bigger game here. There's something more important. Let's focus on that, everybody. Let's stay focused, eye on the prize, and let's keep ourselves in one piece with our soul, our identity, and our ability to love and to have all that, that these people, they don't have that. They can't do it. And you don't want to be one of these walking dead zombie people. Trust me, they would do anything to be able to feel what you feel and to have what you have. Really, they want that. They try to take it from you. They wear it like they're just peeling off these parts and sticking them on their on top of their own skin, hoping they stick and absorb and, you know, fuel them and give them what they need. And it doesn't work. So then they have to go to the next one and the next one and the next one. And it's just really, really horrible. So protect yourself, be well, stay on the path, and let's keep going, troopers. Let's keep going. Okay, much love. Bye.